To McLeod and Quinn, look at what the light did, and I am broadcasting 3 hours early. You must think, what does she think she is, East Coast or something? Well, I happen to be traveling today, going to New York and then to New Jersey for Baba Amiri Baraka's funeral, which is this weekend. Today is the wake, and tomorrow is the funeral, so I can't let him transition on without being in the house to pay my respects, because the brother was brilliant, and he's a wonderful light that, I don't know, the world's a little bit dimmer, a lot dimmer, because of his absence. We're just losing so many lights from the sky, the spiritual sky, and going to really miss the brother. So look at what the light did, and we're going to be broadcasting an interview with Martin Luther. I think I taped that interview and broadcast it 2013, around February. So here is McLeod and Quinn. And here's another McLeod and Quinn. It's called Tunnels.
Thank you.
So that was McLeod and Quinn's Tunnels. And, of course, we have to play something from Martin Luther. And we're going to play from Heart-Shaped Box. Actually, we're going to play, I think we're going to play Extraterrestrial Brother from Fear of Faith. And then maybe, no, I think I'll just go ahead and play his interview. I've been teasing you with this. I'm going to play his interview. I really am. So we're going to play Fear of Faith from Extraterrestrial Brother.
To my big brother.
Another like my brother.
Ooh.
So that was Martin Luther's Fear of Faith from Extraterrestrial Brother, and he dedicates that to his big brother. And I didn't realize that I taped this interview February 10th, 2012, so it's been a minute. It's a great interview, though. It's one of those timeless conversations. So enjoy. Yeah, the last time I spoke to you, it wasn't the last time I've seen you in concert, but the last time I spoke to you was over at that church on 14th Street, close to Bresch, and it was a fundraiser for the San Francisco 8, I believe.
The San Francisco what?
8. And
African American Culture Conference.
Yeah, no? right next door to the African American Museum and Library. In Oakland. And Kev Choice played piano for you on that gig.
Yeah.
Mhm. Yeah, and you were magnificent as usual. And so so I was just like, oh, but it was just really great because you talked a little bit about your politics and stuff, and it's like, it was really, really, really great. So really happy that, you know, folks are going to be able to have the opportunity to not just, see you, in an intimate setting, but be able to have a conversation with you, because it's not always that, the public is able to hear about the thinking behind the art, you know?
Mm. I hear what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that's kind of missing overall, an appreciation for the artistry and for our artists, based on the fact that we are not allowed in to get behind the wall, and there's either an expectation of, if you have some notoriety and status, that you're somebody, we see what you do and you leave and that's it, or you're somebody who's trying to get people to pay attention to you, so you're not worth paying attention to. There's like a Vidoc right there, a great little space in the middle that I think is underserved. What I would like to do about it is host some sort of songwriter conference performance, mm-hmm. something on a regular basis where maybe the first week, the first Thursday or whatever every month, there's a songwriter showcase, something that showcases the songwriter so you can get behind the music and people can actually work on their craft. I think that would be helpful.
Yeah. I mean, how many people know that you went to a historic black college and you might have been born with the gift, but you went sort of the traditional route insofar as, getting a college education and learning about the business of art, so that perhaps you might be able to hold on to your royalties a little bit better than some of your predecessors.
Indeed. And that's a full intention, just to me, we all have the ability to course correct.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm doing my part. I'm accepting the tutelage, taking in the knowledge, seeking more of it, and then also sharing it with those who have a hunger and a thirst.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your concerts are real, like, theater almost,
Glad you mentioned that, because musical theater is really, it's really like a forte in my mind. Like, okay, because if you give a backdrop, if you give a setting, if you curate and you create, boundaries and a zone that the audience can pay attention to, then there are different things that they can pick up on and learn throughout the performance, as opposed to, if my music was just, say, dance music, then you don't have to think much about it. You can just get up and dance.
Mm-hmm.
But I have things that I would like to share and impart with the audience that I think may be beneficial to the listener's life and hopefully the lives of the people that the listener is in touch with. So if I'm really doing my job, then I'm sharing some thoughts, or I'm adding some affirmation to some strength and some personal triumphs that people may have already arrived at in their own growth process. So for me, it's more than just music. It's more than just this funky bass line, or it's more than just this cool look, or this fresh chorus, or, these slick lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
It's all of it. And it needs to add up to something as opposed to taking away from something.
Mm-hmm. Does that have anything to do with, that name that you're carrying? Martin Luther?
Maybe. you know, maybe I could have probably been all kinds of different types of cats, but I've been aware of the weight of that name for a long time, and I never wanted it, never liked it, never cared to have it, none of that, because it was somebody else's famous set of circumstances that I could do nothing to outdo. You know what I mean? It's like, well, you can never out-accomplish Dr. Martin Luther King. And then there's the pre-existing Martin Luther, the theologian.
Yeah.
These people have left their mark on the world in a way that is just, you know, it's hard to measure up. So that pissed me off when I was young, but after a while, I just dealt with it, you know, just accepted and keep it moving.
Well, I'm sure when Stevie Wonder, you know, did that song Happy Birthday, and it's like, it's not about me, but it's about me. You know, that's like your song, too.
Yes, I hear you.
And there's like a holiday, you know, the person whose name you carry is the first black holiday, national holiday in this country, and there are no more still. You know, this is it. So it's like, ooh.
You know, Obama might get one, who knows, but that's a stretch. But right now, this is it.
Right. Yeah, it's like, yeah. I was just looking at some of the... I was listening to some of your music and looking at some of the titles of some of your songs, you know, Killer Machine, and then the lyrics, like, ooh, they're so nice. Love is the Hero. It's like, wow, that is really nice. And then, you know, you've got Extraterrestrial Brother, and then you've got, like, stripes painted on your face in the image. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Yeah, so talk a little bit more about some of this iconic kind of imagery that sort of accompanies and enhances your musical statements. And have you always done both of those things, that had like a visual and aural kind of presentation style?
As an artist, yes.
Mm-hmm.
As far as someone who is doing his best to get his fledgling company, you know, on solid ground, there are things that I have, you know, that I think are really good ideas that are not always executed to just a certain level and a quality and a consistency that I would like for things to be released and delivered to the public in a timely fashion and a consistent basis. So there are times when I get frustrated with the fact that it's just me and a couple of partners, and we have a pretty expansive breadth of attention from people. However, we have to figure out that one move that's like the solid fist so we can make great impact and strike in one blow. What I've been doing is trying this, trying a little bit of that, you know, a little judo chop here, you know, a little back kick, a little, you know, somersault here, as opposed to that one power punch and push right through. And I say that because you will see things released online. You will see things that are online only. You will also find things at my live shows that you can't get anywhere else. Mm-hmm. Because as a creator, I'm creating all the time. So it's hard for me to stop, to focus on one body of work with one release date, with one schedule and one agenda, because the business of music is moving at its pace. I'm moving as a creator at my own pace.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's media and the attention that you need from public relations departments and people that are writing articles and reviewing records, and then the timeliness as to which they can actually release that article or whatnot. All that works against me as a creator, because I'm two more records deep by the time the first one is just about to get some notoriety and some press.
Mm-hmm.
So what you've seen with the Love is the Hero, I've been talking about that record for quite some time. Mm-hmm. However, I didn't want to release it unless I had the right songs and the right amount of PR and promotional push behind it. I'm still working on getting that securing that right amount.
Mm-hmm.
However, there has been international interest in the project, and what I've been doing is leaking songs and performing songs and testing material. And in the interim of not having released Love is the Hero yet,
mm-hmm.
I'm looking at my computer, as I often do, and I see all these songs sitting there that the world doesn't get a chance to enjoy. So I reached out to a good friend on Twitter and asked him about some of his creative visual talents as far as design, and sent him a photograph. Well, he sent me back the image that you see with the zebra stripes.
Mm-hmm.
And the zebra is my logo, so I thought that was very inventive and creative to utilize both you know, my company and some of the things that are consistent with all the releases that I put out, the zebra logo.
Mm-hmm.
And once I saw the image, I felt it was very appropriate for a title that I had been playing with in my head called Extraterrestrial Brother. I thought it might be a good way for people to get a wide variety of the things that I do and not actually have to be so judgmental of any of them, whether they are completely mixed and mastered songs or things that were rough on the grills, like what I like to call it, when I'm working on a song and I'm just listening to it in my car. Mm-hmm. And it sounds pretty good. However, it's not finalized or it's not mixed completely or it's not mastered at all. So I took a group of songs that were in that state and combined them, put them in a certain order, listened to it a couple of times, and I liked the way that it made me feel. It made me feel like I understand this artist and the range of artistry that this artist engages in. I was interested in the journey. I never got bored. So the next day I released it on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a move that happened without any setup, any PR, any promotion. And interestingly enough, it's Extraterrestrial Brother has received some very high rewards and remarks and, you know, album of the year on certain bloggers' lists. It's generated a number of thousands of dollars from the fans who have the option to download it for free, or if they would like to pay for it, they can name their own price.
Oh, that's nice.
And I thought that gave me a, you know, great recompense, great
mm-hmm.
reward. It made me feel like, wow, there are people not only appreciating my work, but will take it upon themselves to make sure that they pay for it, as opposed to just taking.
Mhm. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's really cool. Why don't you talk about some of your musical influences? I was reading and it said, you know, in one of the bios that I read that you grew up, you know, playing music in the church and in San Francisco. And was Martin Luther King Jr. a Morehouse man too?
Martin Luther King Jr. was definitely a Morehouse man.
Yes. I know you don't, you know, you talked about that name and the weight, but did that influence you going to Morehouse?
Not at all. My decision to go to Morehouse was based on a few things. I had applied to only a select group of colleges,
mm-hmm.
and while I was on a historical black college tour, I was in Atlanta, and we got the news that I had been accepted. Well, I was in Atlanta at the time, and I was having such an amazing experience with all of these young black people and this energy. It was fuel. It was food.
Hmm.
It was multinational. It was all this different stuff going on, you know, and I was with it. So once I got accepted, I was dead set on going, you know, to Atlanta and making that my new home.
Hmm.
And the other side of that coin was that my brother, may he rest in power, he went to Morehouse 11 years before I did.
Hmm.
So I got a chance to visit him when I was a child. And I was familiar with the environment. I remember his apartments. I remember routes that we used to take when we drive around the city still to this day.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got to Atlanta, it was like coming to a second home already.
Oh, that's great. That's really great. Do you have any family in the South?
Yes, my family comes from the South.
Oh, okay. What state? Is it Georgia?
Yeah, from the great state of Texas.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a great state. It's huge.
Yes, we hail from the great state of Texas, East Texas.
Oh, really?
Marshall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the historic part. Yeah. Black towns were in that area.
Exactly. One of my great relatives owned a town in Texas.
Which one?
At the time, it was, well, the name of the town, I can't tell you now, but Malakoff is a town in Texas you'd be hard-pressed to find these days on any map.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
On my mother's side, we have roots that go all the way back to undocumented places that are just, you know, just down the bend, round yonder, you know, take a left when you get to that big old pecan tree, you know,
mm-hmm.
just go until you can't go no more, then you'll be there. It's some kind of place.
Oh, that is really awesome. Yeah, I just think my family's from Louisiana and Mississippi, and NASA took over Logtown, Mississippi, and so even on the birth certificates, people would say that it didn't exist because now the town is gone. because it's belongs to NASA. And they bought them out, you know, they gave them, you know, a little money for the houses, and then people moved to, like, Pearlington and Picayune and places like that. But it was never quite the same afterwards. Yeah, so I totally can understand, you know, sort of these towns sort of disappearing because of the government eminent domain and, you know, sort of disappearance of black communities the way it happened to not just black communities but indigenous, you know, land as well.
Indeed. So there's been a political awareness and not so much an agenda but just an awareness of how things can go bad because of my great-great-great-grandfather who owned the town, who owned property where oil was being, they could get oil off the land, the general store, every house you saw, if you look in any direction, the farms, all these things were owned by him. And all these things were taken once he died, and his wife was not aware of how the business should have been handled and operated, nor did he have, it was a sudden death, you know, it came out of nowhere in a lightning storm one night. Young man. So there were some people, you know, of a different hue who were very clever, and they were able to basically swindle this woman out of all the property and the ownership and made her feel that she had to sell everything she owned in order to pay these debts that didn't even exist. So there's a bit of frustration, you know, that exists just all throughout our gene pool. So we're not just, you know, slaves. We're not just people who don't want to work or who are easily broken. You know, we come from a strong legacy, but then there's just things that you have to do to protect it. And if you don't do it, others might be able to take advantage of that one weak link, you know, in the chain.
So when did your parents migrate to San Francisco?
In the late 50s.
Okay. Did it have anything to do with the war industry, or was it that other way that just was sick of the South?
I believe that my father was very clear that in Marshall, Texas, there weren't going to be too many opportunities for him to advance a life that he thought he could have for himself and for his family. He didn't see it possible in Marshall. He didn't see it. He just didn't see it happening. There are opportunities out west. He was a member of the armed services, and that also brought him out west when he was young, you know, around the early teenage years. Not early teenage years, but the fresh out of high school years. He did join the military. He got a chance to see California that way, and he also felt like he could make it happen. He had a cousin that was hell-bent on coming to California, so they, you know, ventured out. They saw some things that gave them, you know, a feeling like, yeah, go for it. And he went for it. Within about 6 months, he sent for my mom, and, you know, they got busy working, taking every job, every odd job, every third job that they could until they were able to get on their feet. And then they continued to save money and do right by them, you know, by the Lord's standard. The moral compass is high in the family. And it all paid off for them, you know.
So talk about, you know, your road to developing your artistry. Did your, like, is your family, like your mother and your father, and you mentioned your brother, your late brother, and were you like a musical, artistic family?
In a sense, yes, because my father, through his mother, Grandmother Ruby, has always had the gift of voice and an awesome memory as well. He could hear a song one time and remember it verbatim. My sister was singing, and she's 6 years my elder. So she was always singing around the house and then wanting me to sing as well. So she would always make me harmonize with her. And while we had to clean up the house or wash dishes or whatever, the radio would be on Luther Vandross, Anita Baker. We used to go listen to Stevie Wonder records down at my uncle's house back in Lakeview. There were so many different moments and interactions with music, with my sister and us singing. With my brother, he was all about the funk and being cool and the coolest of the cool. So, you know, a singer wasn't necessarily the coolest thing he could do. He was just
he was just a player, and he didn't want to be doing no singing, but he wanted to funk as hard as he could. So Parliament, Ohio Players, Sly and the Family Stone, you know, all that funkadelic, he was with it. Rick James, oh man, don't put on some Rick James. That was his music. Now that was his theme music for life. Cold blooded. I could hear him coming down the street right now. But with me, there was something else going on that they were not so much interested in. I caught a hold of a record by Journey when I was real young called Frontiers. Mm-hmm. And it had a song on it called Separate Ways. And I thought the writing and the power and the delivery of the song was the kind of thing that I wanted to be responsible for doing as well. It was real strong, and it was hard rocking the energy. Mm-hmm. So there was a thing inside of me that I couldn't explain until I touched the guitar. And once I had a guitar in my hand, then I realized that what I wanted to do was rock. Mm-hmm. And it's not from any traditional standpoint. I just need to have that instrument in my hand and write and sing and perform. And I felt like I would be able to communicate and get my message and my point across. And once that happened, you know, I haven't really looked back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So were you middle school, high school? When did that happen?
That didn't happen until I was almost finished college.
Okay.
In the neighborhood, you know, there's a time when anything that was looked at as not being, or that didn't have the stamp of approval by the hood, by the ghetto litmus tests that are out there, mm-hmm. it was deemed white. So if you wanted to play guitar, that was a white thing. You know,
really?
You wanted to wear a van, that was a white thing. If you wanted to ride a skateboard or do BMX, that was a white thing.
Hmm.
I heard that all through our childhood by a bunch of black kids. Oh, you want to be a white boy? No, that's not that. I just want to rock. Now, I didn't know to say, well, you know, black people started rock and roll, and
Let's
look at the history of the guitar. I didn't have all of that because I knew what they were saying. You know, if it wasn't a certain funk and dancey type of a sound, then it wasn't black.
Hmm.
And if it wasn't black, it was white. And that was just how simple, cut and dry, you know, things were. It wasn't so much with me. You know, I walked by an art gallery, and I felt like there was something that I had to do with that place.
Mm-hmm.
No one ever put a paintbrush in my hand. I used to draw a little bit, and I like to create things, crafts and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no formal introduction to the arts that would make me know that, I'm an artist, and I have a relationship with any gallery. There's a reason for me to have a relationship with every gallery. I just had an innate feeling.
Mm-hmm.
After I was experienced a little bit more in life, meeting more people who were already out the box. They weren't, you know, operating under the thumbprint of the ghetto litmus test. They had their own freedom to do and try and be whatever they wanted. They helped me to see beyond some of the things that were already as roadblocks. So a guitar, I happened upon one, more or less, as opposed to, I mean, they're always at the mall, but every time we walk into the music store, all the black kids go over by the piano and play the cool song that you know on the piano, but nobody went over by the guitar. And I wasn't, at that point, clear enough or strong enough to just be like, no, what the hell with it? I'm going to get me one of these, and I'm going to figure this thing out. I just didn't know what it was about it. Once I learned, you know, I was good. It just took, you know, 10 extra years.
Right. So, because I know you play the piano as well. So, what was your first guitar? What kind of guitar was it, and do you still have it? How many guitars do you have?
I'd have to try and count. Only maybe 10 or less, but...
Okay.
The first one that I actually, you know, got a chance to play with was a friend of mine, Kim Smith. It was her family's guitar. And while I was in school in Atlanta, I got a chance to play it and take a class while I was going to Morehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to play little one notes and do solos, but the teacher was like, you're going to have to learn how to play these chords one way or another. You got to learn how to play chords.
Mm-hmm.
So that got me started. I had to give her guitar back, and then when I was in Atlanta just kind of hanging out, being a vagabond, an artist, you know, the hanging out from this place to that place, crashing at this loft, painting and doing whatever hustling I could to make money and survive, I happened upon a couch at somebody's crib. I was crashing, and they had a guitar in the window.
Hmm.
And they just thought it looked cool, and I thought it looked cool, too. But it wasn't the best player, but they gave it to me because I had a serious interest in playing it. And so I still have that guitar as well. And since then, I've been able to pick up a few choice instruments, some Fenders, some Telecasters, some Gibsons. The good people at Gibson USA have done a great deal of, they've offered a great deal of support and service to me in my career, whether it be with rehearsing at their facilities, at their showrooms in L.A. or in New York, where if I've had some trouble on the road, they've been able to ship me out some things, you know, like a replacement instrument or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I do play with Gibsons and Fenders primarily. I have a Sector bass. I have a Les Paul. I have another Les Paul. Those are by Gibson. I have a Flying V, which I bought and used in the movie Across the Universe.
Mm-hmm.
I have two Fender Telecasters and an acoustic, a Martin D15 acoustic, and a Sector bass. So, you know, however many that was, that's how many I have.
Mm-hmm. Wow, yeah. I like the title of some of your films, Across the Universe. It's like, I mean, they just so work so well with you, with your image, you know, and the titles of you know, your record label and your latest, your album, you know, it's just sort of, it's like mysterious, and it's not something that's easily within one's grasp, and it's also a different way of looking at, you know, a black man and looking at music that's coming from a black person or a person of African descent, that, you know, you might think you know everything, but then, you know, you put a label on it, you put a name on it, it's like it makes people, like, take a double think, so to speak.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. Yeah, I was really, I didn't know that you had been in all the movies that you've been in, and and then I was looking at some of your collaborations, and I hadn't realized, because I saw you perform with The Roots, but I didn't know that, you know, you were part of the group. I thought you were, you know, a special guest. So when I was watching some of your videos, your music videos, I saw the one which I really liked. You have a lot of romantic kind of songs, which is really nice. And this one is what's it called? Daily Bread. I think that's a really nice one.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. And I was looking at another one, which was a longer one. It was sort of like a medley that was on your on your website. And I was looking. I wanted to hear the song While My Guitar Gently Weeps, and that was a part of the medley. It's like, oh, great, there it is. And you had some Stevie Wonder in there. So as long as you could talk a little bit about, you know, the various different, I mean, you've been in film, you know, a lot of films, and you've had special guests on some of your projects. Like George Clinton is on one of your songs that I don't remember which record it's on, but and you know, and I was reading that, and I think you mentioned too, you know, sort of the influence of Parliament Funkadelic on your sound. So, if you could talk a little bit about, you know, about your influences and about sort of the range of your work and sort of what you plan on presenting on Valentine's Day, which is, I think, really great considering Love is the Hero is your, you know, your project that you're working on right now. It's like, oh, how apropos, you know?
I can dig it. It's quite natural for me to sing love songs.
Mm-hmm.
I have a voice that has a sweetness in it, and it's pure.
Mm.
If I tried to, you know, massage it and make it more hip, or, you know, sing with a different intention or purpose, it doesn't really work out. So when I say whatever comes to me naturally, it seems to work out fine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the rock and roll comes to me just as naturally as the love songs. I don't have that screamer, James Brown, Prince type of a rock voice. You know, Led Zeppelin, Jimi Hendrix. The blues players have some of the best voices for screaming and pouring that pain out into your eardrums. Mine has a little bit more, it has just a sweetness to it. It's just got a sweeter kind of a bite, and for lack of a real accurate description.
Mm-hmm.
But with that, I use it to the best of my ability to communicate. And more so than really trying to impress the listener with, you know, vocal skill or talent, I'm more pleased with what I offer because of what it has to say and because the writing. See, when I was a child, I used to get in trouble a lot, so I would have to stay in the house
And some of my punishments would be actually doing reading comprehension. And the reading comprehension gave me, in my opinion, a great handle with vocabulary and with wordplay. So with that, I had my own life experiences and my own wants and wishes. You know, I don't have any fear of saying what I feel. So I think it's quite appropriate for me to sing any and all songs and as much material as I can write and create to share that with the world, because it's coming from a place that is out of necessity and very authentic, much more so than it is a place of will this be catchy and become a number one single.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So with that, as far as art goes,
mm-hmm.
I cling to the artists, the James Baldwins, the George Clintons, the Sly Stones, the Ray Charles, the Bill Withers,
mm-hmm.
the Albert Kings, the Al Greens. I cling to those cats, Prince, Michael. When I say I cling to them, Bill Withers, they are my shield, they are my cloak, they are my cape, they are my armament, because they were artists. They were brave enough to speak and give what I would consider silence a voice. They would say what needed to be said. James Brown, Fearless, Troubadours, you know, members of the Vanguard. It is my attempt with all of my artistry to reach that pantheon, to be included in those conversations. It's a stretch, you know, I'm a long ways from it. However, that's my focus. So my focus is not just purely based on, you know, American pop charts and things of that nature that would make someone say, okay, well, who's this? Oh, I know who he is because he was seen on this channel or I heard him on this station. You have to search for me, because what I have to say is not the most, you know, popular and the most slick way of saying what I think is necessary. And people don't want to hear a lot of times what is necessary, because whatever their reasons may be. You know, I have my opinion. However, I'm not going to change what I do. What I do reaches those who are ready for it. And it's an honor for me to have fans, because they know something about me that is 100% for real and true, that they can pin me to the lyrics that I have pinned for them to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
They can use them as mantras. They can use them as guideposts, hopefully in their own life, as I use them as guideposts in my own.
Mm-hmm.
Love is the Hero is a very corny, campy, grand statement. It's also something that is very true.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know love to be your hero, and if you recognize God as love, then you'll see that there's wordplay and there's entendre at work that, in my estimation, will help to keep us vibrating at the higher chakras, or vibrating at a higher level, a higher frequency. When we deal with, you know, when your thoughts are down in the gutter, then the things that become you are down in the gutter. Actions, you know, things that happen to you, circumstances that you find yourself tied in. If your thoughts are above the fray, then you will find that the things that are happening to you in your life will complement those thoughts. Well, that's what I find. And if I don't share that truth, which I think is universal, to my listeners, then I feel like I'm doing them a disservice if I only talk about, you know, sex or heartbreak. Or, you know, there's joy, there's pain, you know, there's life, there's death, there's giving, there's taking, there's receiving. What I'm learning is the more that I give and the more freely that I give, the more abundant I receive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I wrote down, when I was taking notes, Love is the Hero, actually, what I wrote is love is the healer, and then I say, no, love is the hero. And then it's like, well, the other is true as well. And then, you know, tying it back into your name, I think, you really wear it well, because your namesake said, you know, he talked about love a lot, you know, Martin King. And
sure.
And he talked about the power of that love, you know, in its various forms. He talked about agape being, you know, sort of the highest form, because that's the one that sustains itself without any kind of external input. It's like, it is what it is. It's love. And it's sort of
mm-hmm.
self-sustaining, you know, which works really well when you're looking for input. It's like, well, you don't have to have any, because love is enough all by itself.
You don't. You're right. Mm-hmm. Pure, uncut. You know, it requires no explanation.
Mhm. Yeah. And also, I was looking. You know, you've been putting on a music festival. I think I came to like Festival One, your Rebel Soul Festival, and you just had one last year toward the end of the summer. And you planning on having one this year as well?
I do. I plan on having them all the time.
Oh, super.
Hopefully at least two or more a year.
Okay.
But right now we've just been consistent with the one.
Mm-hmm.
And that the Rebel Soul Music Festival is a playground. It's a play yard. It's serious business that happens on the stage. There are serious artists that take the stage and give you their best.
Mm-hmm.
However, if I don't feel like there's a certain amount of soul music in the streets or appreciation for it, then I'll do something about it. And my doing something about it was the start of festival.
Mm-hmm.
I have to do more, again, with the business and, you know, step things up. Time to graduate and get some sponsorships and involve other corporate brands.
Mm-hmm.
That can broaden the awareness, that can bring about a greater financial gain, that can help spread the message to larger audiences. I don't mind, you know, working with other companies that want to tap in with, you know, to my audience, because I'm sure I want to tap into theirs.
Right. Yeah, certainly, yeah. Certainly. It'd be really great, unless you already have, and I just haven't noticed it, it'd be great to have, you know, a product come out of these festivals, you know, Rebel Soul Festival 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then have a compilation so we can, like, have, you know, sort of like a best of to sort of keep and play again. Because, you know, you go to those great concerts, like, man, you know, you can relive the experience in your mind. But, you know, you can't play all the songs. You can't, like, actually redo it. I mean, you just have the feeling of it as opposed to actually being able to hear it again. So that's always really nice, too, because your lineups, you know, shift, and the people you bring together are often people haven't seen those artists together on stage at the same time, which
right.
is really a treat as well. So you bring in different kind of audiences. People get to, like, mingle and connect and see other aspects of the community that they might not necessarily see if it was just one person or one group or another. You sort of, you know, sort of create other communities with these concerts, which is great as well.
I agree. And, you know, some people have taken the cue and gone on and done their own and will help me promote mine, and I'll help them promote theirs.
Yeah.
It's to bring about a sense of community, you know, it's always been something that the Bay Area has had a sense of community. We also feel like there isn't enough community or there isn't enough self-support going on for artists and artistry here in the Bay. So, you know, I'm one of the ones who is just going to do something about it and not be talking or pointing fingers or blaming people.
Right. Well, in closing, I just want to say it's been really, really fabulous speaking to you, and I'm sure on Tuesday, February 14th, from 7 to 10 at the Museum of the African Diaspora, you're going to sort of facilitate an evening people will not ever forget. And so, I think it's going to really be lovely. And it's really great, you know, that you are a part of this the San Francisco Art Commission Art Impact, you know, speaker series. So it's really, really cool. I don't know of the other artists that have been in the series. Maybe you do. But I'm glad you are. And
me too. I'm glad there will be, you know, whoever can come out. I'm going to do my best to give them some good conversation and some good song. If not, great.
Mm-hmm.
It's acoustic, so it's just going to be, you know, it's real right there in your face. This is where you really test, you know, your material and the connectivity of what you're presenting.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people that don't know my accomplishments or my achievements. Some have heard the name. Again, the issue with the name is something that I have not come completely into clarity exactly how to play it, because there will always be preconceived notions and thoughts as soon as you say Martin Luther anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't let that, you know, stop me, because I started using my real name because when I spoke to people and they didn't hear me clearly, whether I was not enunciating or whatever the case, they would hear Marlon or Marvin or Malcolm. Mm-hmm. So when I said Martin Luther, then they would hear me. And it stuck, you know, I just kept going with it. Martian is my online handle, Martian Luther for Facebook and Martian Luther on Twitter, mm-hmm. if you ever want to, you know, reach me, you know, on the social network. And my website, MartianLuther.com, also will take you to, or keep you informed on, you know, new releases and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There's at least four albums that I'm deciding on right now what to do with for this year. And I need to get cracking because there's no time like the present. I need to, but you don't, see, with me as an artist, here we go again. There's so many things that I would like to say and share and communicate. Now, as a business person, there's a limit to the things that you need to release and share, and there should be a style and a design and a strategy, you know, in alignment with the release and with the press and with the videos and with the promotion and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
So, fortunately, unfortunately, however we look at it, I will homogenize a taste of my offering so that I'm not always giving you things that are all across the board, because I know that it's confused certain audiences where I go from the ballads, which they dig, and then I go into a hard drive and punk rock tune, which they may not have been a fan of, mm-hmm. you know, The Clash and 24/7 Spies mm-hmm. and what's my brother's The Bad Brains,
mm-hmm.
As well as Blink 182 or Good Charlotte or, you know, all these, you know, Green Day. These all these artists impact my artistry equally. There is no, oh, yeah, I'm just going to, you know, dig on a Pinterest rock and roll, but I'm really into the soul music. Or, you know, I really just need a little bit of soul, but I'm all over these modern rock tunes. I can't differentiate, because to me, good songs, good material, the Foo Fighters, they write some of the baddest songs. And they give you that energy when you go see a show.
Mm-hmm.
Radiohead. I can't stop talking enough about Radiohead. I cover Radiohead performing songs in some of my shows.
Mm-hmm.
The Black Keys. You know, the list goes on. White Stripes. I'm in an indie rock vein.
Mm-hmm.
Strong. There's a band coming out of San Francisco you can look out for named Siddhartha.
Yeah, I've heard of them. Yeah.
Yeah, Siddhartha's dope.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad to see more. What people, you know, want to dub as black rock or black indie rock, to me it's indie soul, but it's just more expression, you know, from the African community that is not as traditional as the beats and rhymes. So whatever it may be, if it's any good, then you can count on me to support it. Crystal Waters, look for her. She's not from the Bay, but she's really, really rich with her offering. There's so many artists that are out there that are really good. You know, it's just that when you have such a small box like a BET or Clear Channel radio stations, they're going to go for this popular thing
mm-hmm.
only. And if you don't fit in the popular box, then it's almost like your stuff is no good or you don't exist. But Michael Fonte and Amos Lee and Robert Randolph and Cody Chestnut, and the list goes on of others who've been out there doing it and making a way doing it. You know, I guess maybe it's just going to be on me to start that kind of TV network. I'm not scared, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, yeah, you already sort of do that. I'm not sure certain where on your website it is, but you have like links to best, you know, to YouTube clips that you like and to these artists.
Mm-hmm.
So you're already doing it. Yeah, definitely, because that's what I like about, you know, coming to your concerts, because one doesn't know exactly what to expect, because you like and you're good at a whole lot of different styles of music. So, you know, you do this and it's like, ooh, that's nice. So, you know, it's like it broadens your palette. I mean, I'm glad that, well, I hope. I mean, you mentioned that you're going to, like, do this, you know, project where you are not as diverse in your different styles, because people get lost and people don't necessarily like what's like, well, darn. it's nice being educated, you know. I love being challenged, you know, aesthetically.
Mm-hmm.
Because then
and
you
I
grow.
I like to take the audience on a journey. Just so Extraterrestrial Brother serves that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And uniquely enough, it's probably the most accessible project that I've released to date.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to take all these things into consideration,
you also have to be, you know, aware of your base and make sure you're servicing your base. I mean, this doesn't have anything to do with so much so the artistry, but it has everything to do with business.
Mm-hmm.
You have to service your base and make sure that they stay with you. You know, I don't really have a fear of losing people, but I don't want to confuse people.
Yeah.
And I do want people to stay in there and really get everything, listen to everything that I put out, because everything has something to offer you. You know, that's how I feel about it. But I know that sometimes you only have 3 minutes to make your impression and make it a lasting one, or you're quickly forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And you might not get another chance to give us that 3 minutes.
Yeah,
this is
true.
The business of music. You know, we are in the business. So all things considered, Tuesday night will be expression, sharing, storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I tell stories, I write songs, I have fun, I play guitar, I'm glad to have an audience. I was happy to be in the different motion pictures, from Chasing Liberty to Dave Chappelle's Block Party to a television show. What was that thing called? Love Monkey. And then there was Across the Universe. There's talk of Across the Universe 2. You know, there are more opportunities in the cinematic arts. And I'm game, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Life is short.
Yeah, shorter for some than for others, but definitely it keeps on moving forward, so you have to definitely do something about it, you know, like otherwise it's going to be gone, and it's like, oh, yeah. I didn't do anything.
Exactly. And that sucks, so, you know, later for that.
Yeah, totally.
I'm with the viewers.
Yeah. Wow. Well, it's been really, really great connecting with you, and I look forward to seeing you in your acoustic space on Tuesday.
All right. Well, if you know anybody that likes good music and in a good hang, tell them to come on out.
Oh, I certainly will.
We need some promotional support.
Right. All right. You take good care. Thank you again.
All right. You have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.